Mr. Pittman, Reel 3. Now, the next thing we have, you left Whale Island and you were sent to the Hood.
Mm.
Did you have any choice at all in this? I would imagine not.
No.
And how did you feel when you heard you were being posted to the Hood? Because the Hood had quite a reputation.
I was very pleased, yes. I was very pleased to join the Hood.
And could you give us, what was the standing of the Hood at the time? Perhaps if we go the popular view of the Hood, and then perhaps your view of the Hood, you know.
Well, she was a marvellous looking ship. I joined her at Farewell Jetty at Portsmouth. And she was 814 feet long, if I remember rightly.
And what were your first impressions?
Oh, pride. To be sent to the Hood. Everyone was prayed to be sent to the Hood. She did all the best jobs, all the best cruises.
And it had a big reputation with the public as well, didn't it?
Oh, yes. She was a splendid looking ship. The finest sea boat afloat. In rough weather, she used to be known as the largest submarine afloat. She used to go straight through. In fact, I used to have a photograph taken from the Strasbourg, but I lost it on the Barham. And all you could see was two funnels going through the water. And in rough weather, she used to go full speed and tell the destroyer to go home.
Were you aware on joining the Hood that it did have problems, that it was a battle cruiser, not a battleship?
I knew it was a battle cruiser, but I didn't think about the unarmoured deck. I didn't realise that she did have an unarmoured deck, to be quite honest, no. She only had 3-inch plates over the magazines. But she had 12-inch flared sides amidship. So she would have probably stood hit on the armoured plate. But
that was not known to you at the time, and wasn't a topic of conversation.
No.
Now, when you joined the ship, you were joining. Would you by then be a fourth class?
Acting fourth class.
And what was your, where was your mess? Which mess were you in?
We had an OA's mess. And also, let's see, shipwrights were in there, that's right. And EAs, so it was quite a big mess.
And what could you describe it? But, you know, just what the room looked,
you had a mess where you ate, and then you had sort of a piece which served as sort of a lounge.
And where did you sleep? In the lounge?
Hammocks.
And what size was the room? What was it like? You know, what fixtures and fittings did they have?
Oh, you had sort of cupboards which acted as wardrobes with curtains around, and you had a sort of couple of chairs and that sort of thing in there, and the stools, and a dartboard, and all this sort of thing.
And what about and where exactly were the hammocks? Were they in the same room?
Yes. But I used to, in summer, I used to take it on deck and sling it on deck.
How did you take to the hammock?
I used to like them.
Why? What was good about them?
Well, when you were at sea, you stood still. You didn't swing with it. You didn't roll or swing with the ship. You were down like a pendulum.
Did you get used to them quickly, or was there any getting used to? Or were you just a natural?
I got used to it fairly quickly, I think. In fact, when I was commissioned, I took it a while to get used to sleeping in a bunk.
Now, what was your job as? What was the shipboard routine as for you? As
well, I should never forget my first morning on the Hood, because it was the last time I ever used the F word. I came into the workshop, and the whole staff were there. We had two chiefs, Senior Chief Brigham Young, and the second chief's name was Burgess. And I said something about the effing so-and-so. And Brigham Young said to the second chief, in front of the whole staff, "Young Pittman's growing up fast, Harry. He said, is he, Brigham? Why do you say that? He said, he's now discovered his penis has another use besides urinating. I'm 83 and I've never used that word since.
And you'd sworn quite a bit before, had you?
Yes. Oh, he was a good chief. When we went to our first foreign port, Gibraltar, he sent for myself and another youngster, and he said, I want you two to go over the border to La Linea tonight.
He was a chief ordnance artificer, Brigham
yeah.
Young.
Yeah. I want you to go over the border into La Linea, and I want you to go to a brothel. He said, one that also has a bar. Now, he said, go into that brothel, pick the girl you'd most like to go to bed with, but don't. He said, get yourself a drink. In fact, have several drinks. He said, and just sit and watch her. Well, I picked on a beautiful looking girl, but having seen her go up and down stairs in a couple of hours, I lost any desire to go to a brothel again. So he was really a caring chief. That he was very strict, mind you. But he really was a caring chief, you know.
So he took an interest in your moral welfare, basically.
That's right. Mm.
And what was your sort of shipboard routine? You were acting, but then I presume you were confirmed fourth.
After a year, you got confirmed as a fourth class.
And what was your job?
Well, I was first of all put in to assist a senior OA in B turret. His name was Bert Rolley. He went down with her.
And what were you doing? What was your role assisting in B turret? B turret was what, the second forward?
Second turret forward. Oh, in all his jobs I had to assist in doing that. And I shall never forget, there was a valve leaking overhead. And he stopped the leak by undoing it. Instead of tightening the nut up, as I thought he did, he should have done, he undid it and stopped the leak.
What was that about? How did that work?
I said, what's the idea, Bert? I said, you've undone that. He said, it's a U-leather twerp. Now, I didn't understand. A U-leather was a U-shaped seal, shaped like a U, but it was sort of double. A U itself, but the interior was placed like a U too. The idea being the hydraulic pressure opened it out. But what happened if you tightened the nut too tight? You caught it. And that's what was happening. It was too tight and it was caught. So
now, what exactly was your role in B-Turret? I mean, and could you tell me what the crew was of B-Turret as well? I mean,
well, you had the Gunhead's crew, or you had the...
Who were they?
Oh, they were seamen. And in charge of the turret would be a turret officer.
What would he be, a lieutenant or...?
Well, no, the one we had in B turret was a lieutenant commander. I forget what his name was now. He was very nervous. He used to always have an alarm clock in his hand when the gun was firing. And as soon as the bloody gun fired, he used to drop it.
So you have him. Any other officers in there?
No. You had the gun layer, trainer, breech operator, the various operators, and down in the working chamber you had the same all round, and down in the showrooms.
How many in the working chamber and the showrooms?
I suppose about half a dozen or so.
In each?
In each turret's working chamber, yeah.
Doesn't have very many. I thought they had more than that.
No, I'm just trying to think. You might have to go back a long way, you know. You'd have the... In the working chamber itself, you would have the cage operator. He used to bring the cage up from the shell room. And everything was interlocked. One action couldn't take place before another action had taken place. This was sort of like levers that interrupted the operating lever. And when the action took place, they were removed. In fact, I think the The ultimate interlock gun was the 8-inch gun. They had about 22 interlocks. And you'd then.
So if one went wrong, that the whole process stopped, I would imagine.
Yes. And the OA, that was me, I was stationed in the working chamber.
And what was the working chamber like? What was around you?
Oh, well, all hydraulic pumps, hydraulic pipes and valves and that sort of thing around there, and there's levers and all sorts of things. Oh, yes, and I beg your pardon, yes, you did have some ready-use shell racks. When you're going into action station, you should bring some up ready in case anything happens. Sorry, I forgot to mention that, yeah.
Now, there's a lot of questions being asked now about that, but you know about that, as much as penetration. Yeah. Was that not seen as a risk?
No, I suppose it wasn't. No. I suppose they thought, the Horde, of course, they thought everything was fleshed out.
Now, what would happen when the gun fired? You've gone through some of the process, but what was it like in the turret, and what was your job? Did you actually have a job in the turret?
Only stand by if anything went wrong. The smaller the gun, the louder the noise. Big guns don't make a lot of noise. It's more of a than a sharp crack.
What was it like when the gun fired? I mean, that's the sound, but what was it like? I mean, did it shake or, you know, what was it just like?
Well, no, because the gun automatically recoiled and run out again. The energy of recoil was absorbed in overcoming the runnage system. That was compressed air. What they called the recoil cylinder really only controlled the recoil. It didn't absorb the energy of recoil. And this was an argument I always had, because people used to say the recoil cylinder controlled the recoil. Absorbed the recoil. And I always said, no, it didn't. It was absorbed by the recuperator, which ran it out again. And I had ample cause to thank myself I was right.
That's later on, I presume.
Yeah, but having on the Glasgow.
So, there wasn't that bad a noise. Did you have ear protection?
No.
Was it available if you wanted it?
No, because there wasn't a lot of noise.
What about smells, cordite, or whatever it was? You know.
Yes, you just get, when they open the breech, you just get a bit of a whiff come back. No.
Did that have any effect on you?
No. Well, probably I didn't get the worst of it in the working chamber.
And did the whole ship used to shake when it fired a salvo, or...?
Yeah, it used to set back a bit. You know.
The ship?
Mm.
So your role was just a watching, waiting...
For something to go wrong.
And did things go wrong? What sort of thing would go wrong?
On the hood, the thing that would go wrong was these big, thick radial doors. The idea was they opened, and the cage would go up. And then when the cage went up, they would close, right? So it was flashed tight below the cage. Sometimes the door wouldn't open. Sometimes it would shut when the cage was halfway through. And another time it wouldn't close when the cage was up. Always remember, it wasn't unusual when you stripped a hydraulic joint down to find a coin or a penny had been put in it with a small hole through, because it used to be known as gagging the pipe, because the flow of the pressure was too great.
Who would put that in? Sorry.
Artificers.
And would you do that sort of... That sounds a very makeshift repair.
I never had cause to do it. Yeah, there were enough coins in there already, I think.
And how would you fix this radial flashproof door on the cage?
Well, you would find out what had gone wrong. 10 to 1, it was the interlock, which wasn't working properly or something like that. So you would strip it down and fix it and see what had gone wrong.
Could you do that quickly? I'm thinking of what this could have been quite a serious problem in action. I mean...
Well, it could be. Fortunately, it never happened to me in action. Yeah.
So it didn't happen that often? It was just...
Oh, no, not that often, no.
Any other problems that you were there to solve?
Leaks. You sometimes get a hydraulic joint blow. And we quickly change it.
How would you change it?
Undo the joint and put a new one in.
You'd have ready-made joints for the various sizes?
Oh, yes, we carry a lot of spares with us. Yeah.
You wouldn't seal it in situ? I mean...
No.
You couldn't
do that. I always remember... I eventually became the ordnance officer of B turret, which I was quite proud of, only being an acting fourth, because it was normally the job of a chief BO, a third class.
How long did that take?
About 3 months.
So, just in March or so, April?
Yeah. But I always remember the... Around B turret, B working chamber, was a space known as B space. It was the space between the external structure and the internal structure, the rotating structure. And we used to have seamen mates called QOs. And they used to run all sorts of firms in B space. They had a dewing firm, which was a tailoring firm, a cigarette making machine, which they made up particular cigarettes. You were issued with a pound of duty free tobacco, a month of cigarette tobacco. Or you have a pound of leaf tobacco, pipe tobacco. And also used to have a snobbing firm, which was repairing shoes. They did all sorts of things. And I always remember...
And this was actually on deck?
In the turret, in the barbette of the turret.
Actually in the turret?
Yeah. And I always remember my QO was a quite big Scot we called Barney.
QO?
QO, quarters, well, it was quarters armour, but I don't know why they were called QOs. and one of the jobs was to renew the walking pipe leathers. Now, the walking pipes were a swivel pipe, like a pair of elbows. And this transferred the hydraulic pressure from the fixed structure to the revolving structure. And you had two sets of these, 180 degrees to each other. And you had two hydraulic supply systems. And this was a very good thing about the 15-inch and the 16-inch, which was absent in the 14-inch. It meant if you had a hit on one side, you could switch the other pump. Unfortunately, the 14-inch had a centre pivot. But if that was hit, you lost all your pressure. Anyway, these were huge pipes about... manganese bronze, which was quite heavy, and I suppose they were about 8 or 9 inches diameter. And to renew the leathers in the end, though, you were supposed to put a hydraulic jack under them, lift them out, and put a new leather in and lower it again. Well, this big QO, he used to hold onto the rail overhead because the elbow was carried on rollers, and he used to put his stomach underneath the pipe. And say when, I say, like, when, Tubby? And he used to inflate and lift the pipe. And I said, right, lower, Tubby. But he was an amazing character. I always remember I went up to Bee Space one day and he gave me a glass of drink. He said, you'll try that. So I drank it. I said, that's jolly good gin and lime. Where'd you get the gin from? The wardroom? Gin and lime, be buggered, he said. That's white spirit and puffs of lunches.
Did you make a habit of drinking that? It's not
no,
good
for you. No. I think he did, though, because he had purple.
And how did you... What was his role this time?
Well, he used to assist me in any jobs I was doing. Like a labourer.
So he'd just help you with anything you had to do?
That's right, mm-hmm.
And I mean, he was qualified, your ordnance assistant, but how well qualified was he? I mean, what would he know that you, compared to you?
Well, he could tighten a nut up, let's put it that way, and he could operate a lubricating can. And
So pretty unskilled compared to what you'd been through.
Oh, yes, he wouldn't know how to do any fitting and turning, no.
And any other assistants, or was that, you just had the one?
You just had one. Well, you occasionally the Warren Ordnance Officer used to come round and visit you, see what you were doing.
And
our ordnance officer was one called Sam Sully. He was a very nice chap.
And how did his role interact with yours? Do you know, I mean...
Well, he was responsible for the branch, I mean, the ordnance branch on board.
He supervised you?
Yes. but a good ordnance officer, and I followed his example, didn't interfere with the staff. He would come in the workshop after we'd all turned to with our jobs, and then he'd come round and visit you at your job and talk to you. He wouldn't countermand anything you'd been told to do. That was one thing I learned. Because what an officer that did was a ruddy nuisance when I was a chief. And he would deal with you anything which affected your private life. You could go and see him any time, like, and advise you or anything like that.
So he was a good officer, a good warrant officer?
He was very good, yes. I always remember him because he used to come into the turret sometimes and he could smell, because I used to smoke a pipe then. And he would smell me smoking down in the working chamber. And he always called me Bing. He used to say, Bing!
That's your nickname, Bing.
Yeah.
Bing Pittman.
I got that in the artificers because I used to do an imitation of boy at Bing Crosby. Anyway, he said, Bing, put that pipe out or I'll kick your ass. Come up here. So I used to come up and I'd be talking to him. He'd say, where's your pouch? And I'd just give him a pouch and he'd take his pipe. Of course, it was against regulations.
I was just going to say, were you allowed to smoke in the
No, you
end?
Weren't.
But you did.
Yeah. The chap that joined the ship with me, he knew him in his private life because they both came from Northampton, I think it was. And one day he was very cheeky to him. What he didn't know was Tiny Gregson was standing behind him, the gunner officer. And Tiny got all this youngster by the scruff of his neck, lifted him up in his eyes, and he said, if I ever hear you talk to Mr. Sully like that again, I shall thump you.
Now, this gunnery officer, he was would be a Lieutenant Gregson, would he? Or
Lieutenant Commander.
Lieutenant Commander. What was he like, and how did he sort of fit into things?
Oh, a very nice man, very sort of soft sort of man. You know.
And what was his role in the thing? I mean,
well, he controlled the whole gunnery branch on board. He was responsible for spotting and...
I presume he was called Tiny because he was big, was he?
I said he was a huge man.
Huge.
Yes.
And was he competent? I mean, did he have the admiration of the, you know...
Oh, yes, he was very popular, yes.
Mm. Anyone else in charge of you?
Well, the two chief OAs. No, the Warren Ordnance Officer, and then you came directly under the Governor Officer.
Now, what was your sort of shipboard routine? I mean, you joined in January at Portsmouth, and were you in port long?
Well, we eventually, let's see, I can remember now, but yes, I think we were there quite a few months actually.
So you'd have quite a period in
Yeah,
port.
We had she'd just been refitted and we spent quite a time working up.
What sort of working up exercises would you do?
Oh, shooting, gun drill, band and shit, all sorts of things.
What about, so what would the gun things be? When you were working up, what were you looking up for?
Well, when we had target practice, they used to fire at towed targets. Anti-aircraft fire against towed targets.
You only were dealing with B turret, I presume?
Yes.
Yeah. So, you'd practice fire. And what about this abandoned ship exercise? What was that?
Oh, you didn't actually abandon ship. You only went to your abandoned ship stations.
And while you were in port... Or Portsmouth. What was the sort of daily routine like for you?
Oh, well, I used to go to breakfast, turn to 8 o'clock, go to your turret, work until 11 o'clock.
Was there that much to do in the turret?
Yes, there was a lot of routines to do. Yeah.
What sort of thing?
Well, stripping things down and let's see why they worked. they didn't believe it. They say nowadays, if it's not broke, don't fix it, don't they? But in those days, it's routine.
So you'd be constantly going through the bits of the turret?
That's right, even stripping it.
Cleaning it?
Finding it, why it worked.
Why it worked?
But, and then 11 o'clock, you'd go to the mess and have your tot, if you were a PO.
Did you take the rum ration?
Yes.
How was it issued?
Well, it was brought to the mess. And, by the way, in the mess, we were waited on by mess men that were seamen. It was brought to the mess in a kettle. And the mess president would pour your eighth of a pint of neat rum, 8 proof, which was somewhere around about 60%, I think, into a glass. And I'll say, if you were a chief and PO, you were allowed to take it neat. Or I didn't, I always mix water with it, but I don't believe in neat spirits.
It's quite a lot of rum.
It is a lot of rum. And I think half of us were plastered, actually, by lunchtime.
Yeah, it did affect you.
I think it must have done, yes. But what we used to do was to go back to work then to midday. And then midday you went and had your lunch, or dinner as it was called. And then you turned to again.
What about the food you got? How was it organised in your mess? I mean,
messmen used to go and get it and dish it out.
And what sort of messing system was it? I mean, did you have any... was it just all done by the cooks?
Done by the ship's cooks, yeah.
And you had no say in what you had or anything?
Oh, no.
What kind of food would you get? I mean...
Well, steak and kidney pork, roast beef.
Same?
Yeah, Irish stew.
Pretty well the same as you'd had before.
Yeah, but it was a pretty varied menu. You always had a roast dinner on Sunday, you know, roast potatoes and that.
And you got enough?
Oh, yes, got
it. And did you have to contribute towards it, or was it just from your
base?
Yeah,
we used to have a mess bill, it wasn't very much.
What would you be buying extra? Because, you know.
I think we mainly used to give the messmen some money. The waiters on us.
A tip, sort of.
A tip, yeah.
And after lunch, what would you do then?
Get your head down for an hour, which you'd lay it on a stool or something, and then they'd say in turn two, and you'd go back to work again. I don't think you work quite so fast in the afternoons.
And then after the afternoon stint, you weren't obviously on watches, so...
No,
not in harbour.
No.
And in the after the afternoon stint?
At 4 o'clock, you went to tea. And again at 6 o'clock, you went to supper.
And what about recreations or time, or what would you do?
Well, one in Portsmouth, you went ashore, I lived there. And one had to stay aboard at night as duty away. And I always remember Brigham Young said to me once, hey, you haven't been duty yet, have you? I said, no. Well, he said, you'd better stay aboard tonight and be duty. So about 7 o'clock in the evening, he came along and he said to me, do you live ashore in Portsmouth? I said, yes, Chief. Oh, go on, push off. He said, I'll do the duty.
So when you say you lived ashore, I mean, would you actually sleep at home in Portsmouth, or would you just go and...
No, you could sleep at home if you had all night leave.
And would you get that most nights?
Yes.
So you just go home, sleep with your parents. You weren't married then, or were you married then?
No.
So you'd stay at your mum's?
Yeah.
So you wouldn't see much of the mess life in the evening?
No.
Mm. Were you enjoying, you know, the first 3 or 4 months?
Yes, very much, yeah.
And what's the next thing that happened then that you remember?
Well, going to sea and carrying out exercises and whatnot.